Today, the Australian economic miracle isn't. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of those posts covering finance and probably news. The spin from politicians is that strong jobs growth is a result of their great policies. And the RBA often says they deliberately kept interest rates lower to try to protect jobs. Given the way the economy is set up, it is certainly true that those in work tend to be a fair bit better off than those out of work. After all, government support for the unemployed is at best spotty and limited. But the consequences of these policies are having a frankly disastrous impact on both inflation and interest rates, which in turn is putting more pressure on households as net real incomes decline, partially thanks to higher taxes to cover higher government debt and as a greater share of income goes to chase higher home prices and rents. Governments always, of course, have choices, but the bias is to spend more and bigger. In addition, we should note the disproportionate share of current procurement contracts for defence at $58.7 billion relative to, well, almost everything else. And recently, Defence Minister Richard Miles announced a big reform in defence procurement, except it wasn't a big reform, rather a rearranging of deck chairs, as former Senator Rhett Patrick reports. As he says, even those not currently interested in defence need to be a little bit interested. Putting national security imperatives to one side, so much public money is spent on defence. The biggest problem that defence has, and which Miles doesn't have the ability to solve, is the fact that the very senior uniformed people who are running defence acquisition, while undoubtedly being good war fighters, don't have the experience in project management to understand that it is risk that brings down projects. Actually, the article in the AFR from Chris Joy that I covered in my show yesterday highlighted the challenge for the monetary policy mandarins because politicians are pumping the economy full of more and more unproductive cash, crowding out private activity and driving actual inflation a lot higher than it would otherwise have been. And as he said, the brutal truth is that interest rates in Australia would be significantly lower were it not for this pork barrelling. The advent of the pandemic opened the door to untrammelled cash splashes. The RBA has to wear some of the blame in this respect. It was the central bank that enthusiastically encouraged federal and state politicians to borrow and spend as much money as they could during the shock as a form of insurance against extreme downside scenarios. And with the RBA under the cosh, federal and state politicians have become wizards at placing more and more population on the public purse. So the question is, are you really going to vote for less public spending when you are personally profiting from it? Joy concludes, if we want to avoid interest rate hikes, we need to dramatically pare back public spending. We need to back our people rather than the politicians to power prosperity in an extraordinary competitive world. Which takes us nicely today from the ABS this week, which highlighted the impact of these policies coming through. First, the ABS reported that household spending rose 1.3% in October, that's seasonally adjusted. This follows a 0.3% rise in September, and it's the biggest increase since January 2024. Household spending is now 5.6% higher than the same time last year. There was a surge in discretionary spending led by goods, as promotional events saw household spending more on clothing, footwear, furnishing, and electronics following months of weaker spending in those categories, as retailers deeply discounted. Services spending also rose in October, as major concerts and cultural festivals drove up demand for catering, hospitality, and hotel stays in major cities. Services, of course, have staff costs embedded within them. So as incomes grow, so to chase inflation, those higher incomes flow into the wages of workers that actually flows into services costs, so you can see the inflationary pressures in action. Actually, all nine spending categories rose in October. The biggest rises were in clothing and footwear up 3.5%, furnishings and household equipment up 3%, and hotels, cafes and restaurants up 2.2%. In annual terms, miscellaneous goods and services up 9.4% and health up 7.5% had the largest growth rates in the 12 months to October. Services spending was 6.4% higher than October 2024, while goods spending was up 4.9% compared with last year. Now, if you think that inflation is running at 3%+, then you can see that a lot of this good spending is simply the impact of more people spending rather than people spending more. Household spending grew in 7 of the 8 states and territories. New South Wales at 1.6% and Queensland at 1.5% had the largest percentage rises, but Tasmania was the only state where spending fell, down 0.1%. Now, the next data relates to multiple jobs, a trend which I've been watching as it's a sign of potential financial stress in the system. The ABS reported that for September 2025, there were 973,000 multiple job holders, or 6.5% of employed people. 7.6% of employed women had multiple job holders, compared to 5.6% of employed men. And workers aged 20 to 24 years old were most likely to be working multiple jobs at 8.2%. And people who were in the community and personal service working sector as their main job were most likely to be multiple job holders at 11.3%. Over time, we see a continued hike in multiple jobs and households with 2+ incomes, leading to an expansion in mortgage borrowing capacity, which of course further stokes home prices, which of course makes it harder for housing affordability to get easier. And finally, the ABS also reported the number of filled jobs rose by 107,600 jobs, or 0.6%, to 16.1 million in the September quarter 2025. Both main and secondary jobs rose in the September quarter. The number of main jobs rose by 0.5%, or 67,300 jobs, and secondary jobs rose by 3.8%, or 40,300 jobs. Annual growth in filled jobs to September 2025 was 1.2%, and the slowest annual growth recorded since March 2021. Hours worked rose 0.2% over the quarter. The stronger rise in secondary jobs, which are typical part-time jobs, drove a fall in average hours worked per job by 0.4%. The multiple job holding rate rose 0.1 percentage points to 6.5%, and that reflected a 2.2% rise in the number of multiple job holders and a 0.3% rise in employed people. Both men and women drove the rise in multiple job holders, with the number of male multiple job holders up by 10.5% to 428,200, and the number of female multiple job holders up by 0.9% to 530,500. Now, the number of job vacancies fell 1.9% over the quarter and was down 2% over the year. Job vacancies fell in 13 out of 19 industries over the quarter, reflecting reduced labour demand. Market sector industries saw a fall of 2.8% in job vacancies, which was partly offset by a 0.5% rise in the non-market sector. Secondary jobs rose by 40,300 jobs in the September quarter, after two quarterly falls in a row. Despite the rise this quarter, secondary jobs are now 0.7% lower compared to the same period last year, recording the third through the year fall in a row. On the industry scale, 14 of the 19 industries recorded rises in secondary jobs this quarter, and 10 out of 19 industries fell through the year. Education and training were up 9,300 jobs, accommodation and food services up 7,400 jobs, and healthcare and social assistance up 6,000 jobs contributed most to this quarter's rise. Analysis included in the multiple job holders publication from the ABS that combines labour force survey data and labour account statistics suggests that while there were more multiple job holders this quarter, the average hours they work in their secondary job did fall by 4.2% from 9 hours to 8.7 hours. Non-market sector filled jobs rose 1%, or 46,600 jobs, and the market sector rose by 0.5%, 61,100 jobs. Healthcare and social assistance accounted for 46% of the growth in non-market sector filled jobs as demand for health services increased. Cough, cough, NDIS. Despite the quarterly rise, non-market sector through the year growth has slowed to 1.6%, continuing its downward trend since September 2024. But the longer-term trend highlights just how much of the economy is directly supported by government. Growth in the market sector through the year growth remained flat at 1% after having gradually increased since September of 2024 quarter. This sector has the potential to lift productivity in the economy much more effectively than the non-market sector. Remember also the fudge that counts entities funded by government but provided by the private sector, especially within the NDIS, which are really also government jobs, just at arm's length. And in the private sector, we should note that the construction industry accounted for 34% of the growth in market-filled jobs, with filled jobs reaching 1.3 million in this industry. However, the productivity across private sector varies considerably, with agriculture at 307.2 compared with mining at 105.3 and other non-primary market sectors at 151.6 compared with a baseline of 100 back in 1995. Yes, it's true, mining, which is meant to be one of Australia's greatest assets, is almost no more productive now compared to 30 years ago, despite all the tax breaks they get. But get this, the construction sector is less productive than it was in the last century, as this chart from IFM shows, based on a baseline index of 2002. In comparison, the market sector, excluding mining, agriculture, and construction, was at 134.9. Now, this is very troubling because it shows that the vacuous government policies and spending are not helping to create a sustainable economy where ordinary people can thrive. Economist Chris Richardson put his finger on the issue in a recent ex-post, saying there's an imminent budget update, but the government has said they won't do much. They keep their powder dry until May for any major moves. That's a shame, he says. The next election will arrive far too soon, and a chance for a much-needed course correction risks being lost again. There's a great case for the government to trim the fat. Doing that could help the Reserve Bank fight the last mile in the inflation fight, and we need to get match fit for the long haul. 2 decades of doing too little has left us with a legacy of lazy policy. Many of our taxes are terrible, and much of our spending is stupid, and we've drifted into long-term deficit, meaning we aren't as ready as we should be for known costs, such as defence. A more volatile world is a more expensive world, or unknown costs, such as the next pandemic. Perhaps the simplest change of all that the government should announce as soon as possible is some updated rules for the budget. Now, no rules are perfect, but some are worse than others, and our current rules are, he says, crap. They certainly haven't stopped poor policy. How should they help? Well, by allowing the Treasurer to, quote, tap the sign. It is a universal truth that all Treasurers want to be PM one day. That's why they're afraid to play bad cop in Cabinet or ERC when their colleagues come along with yet another marvellous but expensive idea. So smart treasurers have budget rules that play the role of bad cop for them, letting them still be the good cop. Mate, your idea of a universal child care subsidy is pure gold, no matter what those idiots at finance think of it. But, sorry, taps the sign, we promised the punters that we wouldn't spend more than the current share of national income or have a structural deficit bigger than a certain share of national income, whatever new rule applies. In other words, the Treasurer gets to sympathise with the group who I, in my day, Treasury used to call the spending ministers, yet they are still able to avoid bad policy by tapping the sign, the rules that would be broken if yet more demands were piled atop our budget. No politician likes to have their flexibility taken away. That's why we haven't indexed the personal tax system. And it's why, completely coincidentally, the punters get offered extra money when the election approaches. Yet, a smart politician knows that government isn't a sprint, it's a marathon. And better budget rules than those that we have today could help us to set a much more sustainable pace. Dead right. But, as I've discussed with Tarek recently, politicians do not seem to be concerned about the strategic future of the country, merely the next election, which, as Joy reminds us, brings us back to the truth question. Are you really going to vote for less public spending when you are personally profiting from it now? I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.